Chapter 7. Now Marty's dark eyes remained fixed on Jeronim as they sat in their carefully shielded office in the Streeling sector. It was not an elaborate headquarters. They were as yet weak in Streeling, but they would grow stronger. It was amazing how the movement was growing. It had started from nothing 3 years back, and now its tentacles stretched, in some places more thickly than others, of course, throughout Trantor. The outer worlds were as yet largely untouched. Demoiselle had laboured mightily to keep them content, but that was his mistake. It was here on Trantor that rebellions were dangerous. Elsewhere they could be controlled. Here Demoiselle could be toppled. Odd that he should not realise that, but Jeronim had always held to the theory that Demoiselle's reputation was overblown, that he would prove an empty shell if anyone dared oppose him, and that the Emperor would destroy him quickly if his own security seemed at stake. So far, at least, all of Jeronim's predictions had come to pass. He had never once lost his way except in minor matters, such as the recent rally at Streeling University in which the Selden fellow had interfered. That might be why Jeronim had insisted on the interview with him. Even a minor toe-stub must be taken care of. Jeronim enjoyed the feeling of infallibility, and Namati had to admit that the vision of a constant string of successes was the surest way of ensuring the continuation of success. People tended to avoid the humiliation of failure by joining the obviously winning side even against their own opinions. But had the interview with the Selden been a success, or was it a second stub of the toe to be added to the first? Namati had not enjoyed having been brought along in order to be made to humbly apologise, and he didn't see that it had done any good. Now Jeronim sat there, silent, obviously lost in thought, gnawing at the edge of one thumb as though trying to draw some sort of mental nourishment from it. "Jojo," said Namati softly. He was one of the very few people who could address Jeronim by the diminutive that the crowds shouted out endlessly in public. Jeronim solicited the love of the mob in this way, among others, but he demanded respect from individuals in private, except for those special friends who had been with him from the start. "Jojo," he said again. Jeronim looked up. "Yes, G.D., what is it?" He sounded a little testy. "What are we going to do about this Selden fellow, Jojo?" "Do? Nothing right now. He may join us." "Why wait? We can put pressure on him. We can pull a few strings at the university and make life miserable for him." "Oh, no, no. So far, Demoiselle has been letting us go our way. The fool is overconfident. The last thing we want to do, though, is to push him into action before we are quite ready, and a heavy-handed move against Selden may do it. I suspect Demoiselle places enormous importance on Selden." "Because of this psycho-history you two talked about?"
"Indeed."
"What is it? I've never heard of it."
"Few people have. It's a mathematical way of analysing human society that ends by predicting the future." Namati frowned, and felt his body move slightly away from Jeronim. Was this a joke of Jeronim's? Was this intended to make him laugh? Namati had never been able to work out when or why people expected him to laugh. He had never had an urge to.
He said, "Predict the future? How?"
"Ah! If I knew that, what need would I have of Selden? Frankly, I don't believe it, Jojo. How can you foretell the future? It's fortune-telling." "I know. But after this Selden broke up your little rally, I had him looked into. All the way. 8 years ago he came to Trantor and presented a paper on psychohistory at a convention of mathematicians. And then the whole thing died. It was never referred to again by anyone, not even by Selden."
"It sounds as though there was nothing to it, then."
"Oh, no. Just the reverse. If it had faded slowly, if it had been subjected to ridicule, I would have said there was nothing to it. But to be cut off suddenly and completely means that the whole thing has been placed in the deepest of freezes. That is why Demoiselle may have been doing nothing to stop us. Perhaps he has not been guided by a foolish overconfidence. Perhaps he is being guided by psychohistory, which must be predicting something that Demoiselle plans to take advantage of at the right time. If so, we might fail unless we can make use of psychohistory ourselves."
"Selden claims it doesn't exist."
"Wouldn't you, if you were he?"
"I still say we ought to put pressure on him." It would be useless, Jeannie. Didn't you ever hear the story of the Axe of Venn?
No.
You would if you were from Nishaya. It's a famous folk tale back home. In brief, Venn was a woodcutter who had a magic axe that with a single light blow could chop down any tree. It was enormously valuable, but he never made any effort to hide it or preserve it. And yet, if it was never stolen, because no one could lift or swing the axe, but Venn himself. Well, at the present moment, no one can handle psychohistory but Selden himself. If he were on our side only because we had forced him, we could never be certain of his loyalty. Might he not urge a course of action that would seem to work in our favour, but would be so subtly drawn that after a while we found ourselves quite suddenly destroyed? No. He must come to our side voluntarily and labour for us, because he wishes us to win. But how can we bring him around? There's Selden's son, Raich, I think he's called. Did you observe him?
Oh, not particularly.
GD, you miss points if you don't observe everything. That young man listened to me with his heart in his eyes. He was impressed, I could tell. If there's one thing I can tell, it's just how I impress others. I know when I have shaken a mind, when I have edged someone toward conversion. Joranum smiled. It was not the pseudo-warm, ingratiating smile of his public demeanour. It was a genuine smile this time. Cold, somehow, and menacing. "We'll see what we can do with Raich," he said, "and if, through him, we can reach Selden."